call this meeting to order. Let the record reflect, the time is 11:00 a.m. Tuesday, March 20th, 2007. Today we have Representative Dugan, Dahl, Lynn, and myself, Chair Newman. Let the record reflect, we do have a quorum. Today we're going to wrap up, I hope, House Bill 147 and 167. It is my intent to try and move these bills along today. And just for everybody's confirmation, we're just going to review a little bit about what we did. Is last year, or last week, we introduced 147 and House Bill 167 to the committee, so they are before the committee. We, because their content is so combined, you know, they're very similar in what they
Intertwined.
Do with getting money towards the tourism industry, we've taken public comment, and we've opened public comment, allowed public comment to be used on 147, 167 combined, a combined comment on those. So I'd like to do that, and then when we get done with those pieces of legislation, we're going to be hearing a presentation by a company called M2Z, and they're working on some broadband stuff in Alaska and expanding broadband, so hopefully we'll be able to have plenty of people here to listen about that. It's very exciting about the opportunities that they're offering towards education and expansion of those products. We're going to start out first hearing a little bit about, a little review again on 147 and 167 from their presenters, and then we will go to public testimony. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Sharice Millett. I'm Staff Representative Harris, who is the sponsor of House Bill 147. 147 is a simple bill. Currently, the statute for funding for tourism marketing is a 50-50 match. We propose to change it to a 90-10 match. The state would provide 90% of the funds that would match the 10% that the marketing groups would raise. That is it in a nutshell.
Good morning. I'm Jeannie Osnes. I'm staff to Representative Craig Johnson, sponsor of House Bill 167. And this bill basically is an appropriations bill. The funding is coming from two sources, the general fund and from the vehicle rental tax account. The amount of money is a step up to the plate, more or less, for our state to fund and help the marketing of our state to the tourism, for the tourism industry. And that's it in a nutshell as well. There was a large presentation last week that delineated quite a bit of what they were doing, and we have other presenters today, too.
It's a great job. Everything that we've heard so far on this, and it was a wonderful presentation last week that we heard, and we got to see some of the numbers and the statistics on just how far-reaching this is in the state. What I'd like to do is open up questions from the committee to these two presenters. We will probably hear some public testimony, and then I will allow again any further discussions or questions from the committee to go back and ask the sponsors of the bill after that, too. So we're going to allow a couple of different opportunities there, because sometimes after you hear the public comment, it's nice to go back and ask the presenters of the bill some questions, and I think that that's fair. So any questions right now for the presenters? Representative Dugan.
I think I have a question for each of the presenters, Mr. Chairman. Sharice, on the bill to change the percentage, can you tell me how 90-10 was picked?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, I can attempt to tell you why 90-10 was picked. Right now, the funding that the ATIA has testified that they can come up with is, I believe they're at a rate of $8 million. And with the recent change in the tax structure for the cruise ship industry, there'll be some funding that won't be available through the cruise ships because they're going to be writing a check to the state for upwards of $70 million. So they anticipate that funding for the cruise ships not to be part of their budget, which reduces their budget back down to about $4 million. They also are having, from what I understand, some problems funding getting additional funding that they rely on from the visitors and convention centers that are having problems themselves with their membership. So that will reduce greatly what ADA marketing is, the group that the state contracts will have to raise on their own. So we came up with a number. They estimated that they can raise $2 million at this point in time. And so if we were still at the 50-50 match, that would give them a budget of $4 million. And I can tell you from my experience in marketing that $4 million when you're doing a national or international campaign doesn't take you very far. So they have come up with a number of $20 million that they feel that, they could work within that comfortably to market our state to where it needs to be. And
okay. So we got 90-10 based.
Representative Dugan?
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We got 90-10 based on the real-world situation as we found it.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. If I might continue.
Representative Dugan?
In terms of the amount of money that's contained in House Bill 167, I was wondering if we have any details. I mean, it's a pretty big increase. It's gone from what's a total of $10 million now to a total of, what is it, 26.5. I was wondering if we have any details on what the additional money is going to be used for.
The details obviously would be handled through the contract, and specifically.
For the presenters, please, so our clerks know what's going on, because they have to record all this, if you could please direct all questions through the chair.
Thank you. Through the chair. The funding is for expanding what they already are doing and also to bring in new tourists to the state. And I believe that they will discuss their budgeting specifically.
Okay, great.
And Representative Dugan, if I may add to that, I believe it was stated that there was a $10 million, but that was $5 million from the state with
right.
$5 million matching to come up with that 10.
Right.
And with the, I think there may be a reduction, or the industry feels there was a reduction because of the last cruise ship initiative. That's why they feel there, is that?
That's correct, Chairman. The $5 million was matched 50-50 with the industry, and so it did come to the $10 million. But that $5 million that the state invested brought a net surplus to the state of $20 million. So the amount of money that the state put into the project and the amount of money it cost to deliver, there was a profit to the state net surplus.
And Representative Dugan and other members of the committee, we do have Al Clough from the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. If we need to go to him for more information, and so great source of information. I encourage you to take advantage of that and maybe formulate some questions from him too, as somebody's very involved in this and is coming from the administrative side on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It's always nice to hear from both sides, from the legislature and the administration on that. Do I have any other questions for presenters? Representative Dahl?
Are you finished?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Yes, is this a permanent 90-10, or is that only for this year, next year, or just how are we looking at this?
Through the chair, Representative Dahl, this would be a permanent statute change. It would take legislation to go back to some other funding split. So yes, this would be in statute.
But if I may, Representative Dahl, I believe all funds need to be appropriated by the legislature. Would have to be approved. So
through the chair, the 90-10 split would be in statute. The appropriation would have to come every year from the legislature.
Representative Lynn,
yep.
Any questions? Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions? Well, let's get on with some public testimony. I want to state that I was extremely impressed with the amount of public testimony that we had on these two pieces of legislation. Last week, almost 20 people had asked, and I will let them know that their names have been entered into the record, and so that is part of the record, the people who have signed up. I guess we'll start in Valdez. David Cobb, are you there? And I want to ask folks to try and limit their testimony. I know that's somewhat difficult at times, but if you could kind of keep her down to a couple minutes, I'd appreciate that, just because we want to make sure everybody gets a chance. Dave, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Name and affiliation, please.
Okay, my name is Dave Cobb, and I'm representing the Valdez Fisheries Development Association. I want to thank the chairman and the committee for the opportunity to testify in support of both HB 147 and HB 167. These two pieces of legislation are very important to the future of tourism in Alaska. Tourism marketing programs are essential to ensure that the visitor industry remains as a strong, vibrant, and growing sector of our economy. Valdez Fisheries is a local aquaculture program that has developed one of the largest and most successful sport fishing programs in the state. This program has helped to develop a large tourism industry in Valdez made up of small charter boat companies, tackle shops, gift shops, and tour operators. Without a large program at the statewide level, many of these small businesses would or could not market effectively enough to help their businesses grow. Alaska's visitor industry continues to be one of the state's largest employers and one of the brightest spots in Alaska's economy. This is no more apparent than in every small community such as Valdez that has a gift shop, a tour operator, and or a charter boat operator. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Cobb, and I'll remind the committee again that what Mr. Cobb has just stated, you know, that a lot of this involves small industry, and I believe we heard last week that 51% of the funds that this represents goes to businesses with five employees or less. We have Colleen Steffen in Valdez.
Hi there, I'm Colleen Stevens. Some of you may, my real life and job is connected to Stan Stevens Cruises. However, today I'm speaking to you on behalf as the president of the Valdez Convention and Visitors Bureau. And our Convention and Visitors Bureau is a member-based organization with just over 175 small businesses as members. Our community is tied directly to tourism, and the success of those businesses are tied to tourism. The majority of the travelers who visit our community are those in the category of the independent travelers. Since the 90s, many of you have seen the statistics that the independent travelers have been on a steady decline in the state. That has mirrored the amount of public funds going into the generic marketing program for Alaska to keep Alaska competitive in the marketplace. Our tourism industry truly benefits all citizens in Valdez and in Alaska, from impacting everyone in the community, from fuel companies to grocery stores, wholesalers, in addition to tax bases for both the state and the community levels. Tourism is an income provider for Alaska and local communities. Presently, Alaska is having challenges properly competing in the marketplace, both domestically and internationally. As you've seen the figures, Alaska's ranking 38th among the 50 states when it comes to dollars spent from the public sector on tourism marketing. On behalf of small tourism businesses in Valdez who directly benefit from the measures outlined in House Bill 147 and 167, we urge you to cast a vote in support of tourism and small business success in voting in passing both of these pieces of legislation on. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Steffen. Ms. Devin. Let's go to Matt Sue. Bonnie Quill. Bonnie, are you there? Name and affiliation, please.
Hi, Chairman Newman, committee members. I understand that Representative Gatto and Corrine from Matt Sue are also on this committee but aren't present. Is that correct?
They are not present, but we will make sure that all your testimony is included, and they'll get a copy of that. And I'll remind people who are giving testimony, if you'd like to provide written testimony, that will also be included into the packet. Thank you.
Thank you. This committee is well represented by the MATSU. Yahoo! I'm Bonnie Quill. I'm the director of the MATSU Convention and Visitors Bureau, and I've been with the Bureau for 7 years. We're a member-based organization with over 300 members, and I am here to represent our organization and ask for your support of both House Bill 147 and 167. Through cooperative marketing with ATIA, the MATSU CVB has been able to create more awareness of our destination and increase visitors to the MATSU significantly. The MATSU CVB depends on the success of ATIA's marketing efforts. We don't have the budget for a national awareness campaign. we rely on ATIA's marketing to bring visitors to Alaska. Those visitors that they target, we're then able to cherry pick and send them our information to encourage them to visit the Mat-Su. Without the marketing of ATIA, we would have a very hard time bringing visitors to have that wonderful South Denali experience or a glacier experience. But I am here today to ask for your support in both House Bill 147 and 167. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Quill. We also have Ann DeKette from Talkeetna. We have Ann and Sandra White, both from Talkeetna, and I just want to mention that these folks traveled probably 75 miles down to the Wasilla, Iowa. So, Ann, are you there? Ann DeKette?
Sandra White. Ann is here, but she's not going to speak, but she supports these bills, right, Ann?
Right.
Okay, Sandra.
Thank you, Sandra. Representative Newman. And we did come in specifically to be here to speak to these bills. I manage Talkeetna Air Taxi, and my family has worked in tourism since the late 60s in the state of Alaska. My daughter is now also working in tourism. I've also trained dozens of other young Alaskans that have gotten degrees in Alaska and gone on to work in tourism and very good jobs in tourism. One of the things I want to say is that the landscape of the marketing funding for tourism has changed dramatically, as you all know, with the cruise ship head tax. My business that I work for does not have any contracts with cruise companies. However, I have benefited so greatly from the marketing dollars they have always put in, as well as the people that they've always brought. I think it's just imperative that the state of Alaska stand up right now for tourism, which is a thriving, contributing industry in this state. And it's so important that the state of Alaska support and recognize that and have the vision to help us grow and not to let us dwindle. The rest of the states in our great union of United States of America contribute far more than Alaska. States like Ohio and Arkansas are contributing like at least, what is it, $8 million more than what Alaska did last year in their budgets. We're 38th in spending, and people want to come here, but they have to have the message. We have to compete in this level, and there's no way that my business, Talkeetna Air Taxi, can compete and market internationally and nationally. But if we all pull together with the private sector here, who is very active and very participatory, the state of Alaska needs to come up and step up to the plate and support this bill. It's just imperative. There's no way that tourism will continue to thrive, and we can't continue to rely on oil only or a few of the under industries that don't even contribute what tourism does. Tourism also, in my community alone, the growth of jobs, the development of the land and trails, and the raising of the quality of life for the people that live there, I see it every day. Also on House Bill 147 being considered here too?
Yeah, it is, Sandra.
And the original intent of that was for that funding to go into marketing. $600,000 out of $8.5 million does not come up to the intent of that car rental tax. And the marketing budget for an independent traveling campaign is so important to small businesses like ours and that are all over the Mat-Su Borough depend on that marketing. We can't do it on our own, but together we can do it. And I just please beseech you to push these bills forward and let them...
Thanks. Thank you, Sandra.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sandra. And we're trying. And again, I want to ask presenters to try and keep her a little bit of time because we do want to make sure they get through this committee today. But, Sandra, I do have a quick question. You take people up around Mount McKinley and tours and land on the glaciers.
That's correct.
How many of those people do you think are from outside of Alaska? What is the percentage of your business comes from outside of Alaska?
Probably 90%. And a lot of the ones that come that are Alaskans are bringing people from out of state, their friends and family and visitors.
So they ride along as they bring up their guests to your business.
Yes, correct. And they go up again and again when they come to.
Thank you, Sandra.
Thank you.
Bonnie Quill and Mat-Su.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. She's already spoken.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to Fairbanks, LIO. Deb Hickok.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the members of the committee for your hard work in Juneau. Constituents in each of your communities are also working hard to bring more visitors to Alaska. The passage of these two bills is crucial to our success, and I just want to, it's repeating what other people have said, but your support of these two bills is indeed a vote for small businesses in Alaska. I have the privilege of representing the visit industry in two capacities, as President and CEO of the Fairbanks Convention and Visitors Bureau, as well as chair of the marketing committee for the ATIA organization, the Alaska Travel Industry Association. I just want to, the ATIA marketing committee is composed of more than 30 volunteers who represent mostly small businesses from around the state. They lend their expertise at their own expense. They give direction to and monitor the ATIA advertising, sales, and other marketing programs. The committee, along with ATIA staff and contractors, invested many hours, and ATIA does have a detailed budget available on a proposed spending plan for the $26.5 million. In addition, the ATIA Marketing Committee has 10 subcommittees, which further expand the number of small businesses who participate in developing the program. The ATIA Marketing Program is a small business program. One thing that we know from our research at ATIA and our experience, travel to Alaska is not a given. According to the ATIA 2006 Images Study, there are, believe it or not, domestic travelers who would not even consider an Alaska vacation. They perceive an Alaska vacation as taking too much time to plan, as well as taking too much of their precious vacation time to travel. And some of them perceive Alaska as a too costly vacation. These are barriers we have to constantly combat. Furthermore, Alaska has lost the market share of potential visitors. Among the hardcore realities, though, there is good news for Alaska tourism. 51 million adults in the U.S. are potential visitors. But how do we lure them here? How can we compete? There is only one answer. We become more competitive through increased funding through the state of Alaska. As you mentioned, 25 states spent more than two times than Alaska did on destination and marketing. Like it or not, this is the arena where we sell Alaska. We compete every day against well-funded state programs for the same visitor dollars. We must rise to that competitive level. And just a note about Fairbanks in the interior, we understand how hard it is to attract that independent visitor, and we also understand how hard it is to lure visitors to our winter destination. We cannot do this alone. These two bills will enable ATIA to more aggressively pursue independent and year-round travelers. A vote for these two bills is a vote for small business, for your constituents who own B&Bs and RV parks, who are dog mushers, for your friends who are river guides in the summer, and for those who take out fishing charters in the winter. This is a vote for your children who are flourishing in local arts organizations funded from visitor dollars, and for your neighbors who are artisans and craft people. This is a vote for the wine distributor, the gas station attendant, the graphic designer, and the urgent care nurse. These are the faces of the visitor in the industry in Alaska. Thank you in advance for supporting these bills and for supporting small business in Alaska.
Thank you, Ms. Hickok, and I heard you shuffling the papers there, so. Again, I want to remind people who are giving testimony, if you have it written testimony, please send that to my office. We can include it in the packet so that other committees that this goes through has the opportunity to look at your testimony. Pat Kreiner and Glenn Allen, name and affiliation, please, for the record. Are you there, Pat? Park Kreiner from Glenn Allen.
Yes, I'm here.
Park.
Yes, I'm with American Village of Alaska, which is a corporation that runs a gas station, a restaurant, gift shop, a hotel, and 35 rentals here in Glen Allen. I've been here for 35 years.
Excuse me, Park. Please give your name for the record.
Park Kreiner, K-R-I-N-E-R.
Thank you, Park. We just got to follow procedure.
Okay. Years ago, whenever their funding was quite substantially more than it is now, I remember people coming into the gift shop and the hotel and mentioning that they were sitting in their living room and they saw the beautiful ad and made the call to the phone number and ended up in Alaska. Now, whenever I go to the gift shop, which I babysit for my wife and the hotel and front desk, I don't hear hardly any of that because of the funding and the amount of ads that are not being made like they were years ago down in Boise, Idaho, where all my friends live. Even Northern Ireland, where my daughter lives, she saw an ad on Alaska years ago and got all excited. So so as we look at this thing, I'm seeing way less comments of, and our business was down in the gift shop last year about 13% over the year before. I think it's a direct result of exposure. And if we remember Ronald Reagan, I think some of us remember him, he had a term called trickle-down economics. And as the lady, good lady in Valdez just stated, it's not just the tourist industry that benefits from these two bills. It's a trickle-down economy that enhances the towing industry, the grocery stores, everything that is done in our little town here in Glen Allen. Helps hire the high school kids, the youth, the Bible college that's here, and all the other colleges. We have two colleges here. And so it doesn't just help the tourist industry. It helps everyone else that's connected to the community in any way, shape, or form. So I don't know where the tourist industry is rated as far as economically bringing in funds to the state of Alaska, but I would guess it's in the top five somewhere. And my question would be, why would we not fund one of the most economically stable industries in the state of Alaska and produce more and more and more each year by adding to it in any way we can? So I really support these two bills and the good effect it's going to have on our hiring, and help us through the winter, because the summers are good, and then if they're good, we get through the winters in a real stable form, and we can continue to hire and promote and build new things as we make profits. That's what it's all about. Thank you very much for allowing us to have this input.
Thank Park, and I think Park makes a good point. When people stay at the American Village and Caribou Hotel, they probably go over to the local gas station, fill up their car, go over to the grocery store and buy some snacks for the road, and spend a little bit of time, go to the tourist shop there, and maybe purchase a few of the products that they have there for sale. And thank you for what you do, Clark, or Park. DDK from the from Anchorage.
Thank you.
Name and affiliation, please. Dee Dee? Did we lose Dee Dee? Dee Dee, would you like to testify on these bills?
Yes, I'm sorry. This is Dee Dee K. I had muted myself, evidently. My name is Dee Dee K. I am with Talkeetna Alaskan Lodge and Seward Winsong Lodge. I've been in Alaska for over 20 years and have been in tourism all of that time. I'm a single mom, and my my commitment to tourism and tourism's commitment to me has allowed me to raise my two daughters who have attended schools in Anchorage, who now are also working in tourism themselves. In my position, I end up going on the road quite a bit to promote tourism to Alaska, and in many venues, we arrive in a delegation from Alaska, and we see these large booths from all sorts of states, whether it be Ohio or Illinois or Hawaii or other destinations that we're in direct competition with, and all of a sudden we look very small because we don't have the marketing dollars to be able to make the kind of presentations we need to make to really drive and continue to drive business to Alaska. Talkeetna Alaskan Lodge has been in operation in Talkeetna for 8 years, and although we do quite a bit of business in the summer season, we also are a great destination for associations and conferences that have their meetings with us in that shoulder season, and that has been a great benefit to the state to have some other place to be able to meet that allows extra dollars to go into small communities. The new Sunshine Clinic was not there when Talkeetna Alaskan Lodge opened. Now there's a new clinic in Talkeetna that I'm sure was directly driven from the dollars that tourism has brought to Talkeetna from Talkeetna Air Taxi and Russ Flying Service and other places, Mahay's Jet Boat Service, that have all seen business increase because of what tourism has done, and we want that to continue. There are many small, locally owned businesses in both Seward and Talkeetna that, of course, do benefit directly from the tourism dollars that come to the state. If you are at a gas station in Seward, there are many, many RVs that are in that town that are filling up with gas. If you go to the new grocery store that is in Seward, it is there and is fluent and doing a good business because of the fact that many tourists also come through and purchase goods. So I would really like to encourage you and the members of the committee to please move these bills forward. Tourism is a wonderful industry for Alaska. It's a clean industry for Alaska. It's a good way to keep our children in the state and allow them to make a living in a business that is very unique and very fun and very competitive. And in order to stay competitive, we need the dollars to be able to market it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dee Dee. And Dee Dee's one of those, for the committee, Dee Dee's one of those people who gets involved in a lot of different things, but she really knows tourism. Alan LeMaster from Galkana. Alan, are you there? Alan LeMaster from Galkana.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, Alan. Name and affiliation, please.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much for allowing us to testify here this morning and bring focus to our industry that's near and dear to me and about 40,000 other people involved in the visitor industry across the state, generating sales of approximately $2 billion. My name is Alan LeMaster. I am the owner of Gakona Junction Village, Copper River Salmon Charters, Gakona Stop and Shop, Gakona Cabins, Northern Brochure Distributors, all located in East Alaska, just north of Gwin Allen, at the foot of the Wrangell-St. Elias National Park. Parenthetically, this is the part of the state, Valdez to Fairbanks and Palmer to the Canadian border, that has been severely impacted by the reduction of marketing dollars over the past 10-plus years. We're seeing fewer highway travelers, lower border crossing numbers, and this is resulting in many businesses closing year after year after year. When I attended my first AVA convention in Fairbanks in, I think, 1982, we had about 300 members in the AVA. Today, we have over 1,000 members with the new Alaska Travel Industry Association, and over 80% of those members have fewer than 5 employees. So unlike times in the past when the cruise ship and airline industries were the major players, this effort's being driven by small businesses today. It's affecting all of us. I'm the owner, as I said, of a roadside business and have been here for over 25 years. In that time, I've been closely associated with the AVA and subsequently the ATIA at nearly every level. We've actively attempted to market our state to the world with funding from the state revenues in the amounts of over $15 million in the 80s and current level of something over $4.5 million. With increases in costs of marketing over the years, we would need about $25 million to do the same job that we did in the 80s, but that we know isn't possible under the restraints of today's budget requirements on the legislature. Today, however, I'd like to focus your attention on the concept that the monies donated by the state to the visitor industry is not a gift. It's an investment. Currently, the state's $4.5 million investment brings a return of about $50 million to the state. And our research shows increased funding will give us the ability to bolster our television marketing with an emphasis on travel to rural Alaska and the independent businesses across the state. This effort will be directed by giving support to the many small businesses like mine that have in the recent past been neglected. More dollars invested in by the state will translate into higher return on your dollars, and this does not include the more than $50 million expected to be received from the cruise ship industry as a result of the new head tax law passed in the last election. Now we're asking that you take funds from the taxes on vehicle rental businesses and invest them in the marketing efforts of our vibrant visitor industry. By making this investment, you'll not only ensure that the second largest industry in the state will continue to grow and flourish, you will, by the effort, see a marked increase in dollars back into the state coffers. The success of failure of our industry rests on the decisions made at your committee level. I urge you to pay very close attention to our request and listen to the arguments in favor of making strong investment for a strong return on your dollars in the visitor industry of tomorrow. Thank you for having the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Alan, for your testimony. And let the record show that we have been joined by Representatives Joan Hansen and Gatto. Is there anybody else online that would like to testify? We will now go to Juno Chip Toma. Chip's going to pass, but I believe he probably supports this. Is that correct, Chip?
I support the 50-50 share.
Thank you. I see Stan Stevens in the audience. We've got quite a few people in the audience here. We will go back to the committee then. We do have two more off-nets. We have Tracy Bodoin. Tracy, and I remind folks to try and keep their testimony to a couple of minutes if we can. Tracy.
I just have to reiterate what Alan said. You know, we're down here, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not as prepared. I just learned about this, and, you know, the rural guy here can sure use some help. I don't have much else to say at the moment.
Well, thank you, Tracy. You did fine. Is there anybody else off-net that would like to testify on behalf? Somebody from the Copper Valley Chamber of Commerce, maybe?
That was me here, Tracy.
Okay. Thank you, Tracy, and I'm glad that we got your affiliation for the record then. Do we have any questions from the committee for the presenters on these bills? So I'd like to go back to that a little bit. Is there any questions? Representative Dahl?
I have a question,
Dina,
but
Therese,
it's I'm not sure who to direct it to, Chairman. I'm kind of curious about the effect of the marketing dollars that we're going to be putting in, and when the tourism trade started to decline. I see that we have an increase in cruise ship traffic, and more and more it would appear that people in this country prefer taking short, sort of these wonderful trips on cruise ships. And they pretty much stay on those ships, or there's a contract from the ships to certain tour activities. And I'm wondering if there's any correlation between the increased number of cruise ships coming and the way they contract and set up their recreational activities for their passengers and the actual decline of business that would have hit, to the small tour companies and the single traveler going into Alaska. So it's kind of a broad-based question, but I'm just wondering exactly, because here's where I'm going with this. If we add more money into this, are we really going to get the benefit for the dollar, or things changing on a almost a world level that we're no longer going to see that kind of return on that dollar?
Good question, Representative Dahl, ever vigilant to make sure those dollars are spent right. If the presenters would like to maybe forward this question, we do have Al Clow and Brett Carlson maybe.
Through the chair, Brett Carlson can answer the question.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I could piggyback on that, perhaps the very big increase in the price of gasoline, I can see we probably maybe want might be less expensive to use a cruise ship rather than drive the highway or fly and drive. When I first came to Alaska, not counting the military, I flew and then I drove all over the state on the road system. I don't know if I would do that now with the high price of gasoline.
And
for the record, Mr. Chair, the Brett Carlson, Vice Chair of Alaska Travel Industry Association, based in Coldfoot, Alaska, work with the small tour company there. Very perceptive question, Representative Dahl, and hopefully that's the type of dialogue that we should have on an important economic development proposal like this. The answer is yes. Clearly, the product that cruise companies have brought to the market has fit what global consumers are demanding, which is a vacation which can be done in a short period of time for the lowest possible cost or a competitive cost, and it's easy to book, and there's a fourth thing that I can't remember offhand. That is a big part of cruise success, so there's no denying that fact. At the same time, another big part of that cruise success is $70 million in advertising that's getting that product to market. When we bring the independent travel product to market, can we guarantee a short vacation Yes, to answer Representative Lynn's question through the chair, we can with fly drives versus somebody driving their RV all the way to Alaska. Can we offer it at a competitive cost? Yes, but it will never be as competitive as a cruise vacation. There's no denying that fact. It's just reality. Can we offer a high-quality experience? Yes. And are there a lot of consumers out there who will always want to travel independently? Yes. Are they going other places because we're not marketing to them? Yes. And that's why this marketing funding is so important.
Thank you. Representative Gatto.
Thank you. Did you, I want to make sure I heard you correctly, cruise industry is has a $70 million budget?
Correct.
And that budget covers?
That's marketing and advertising for the major cruise companies.
The entire industry worldwide?
For Alaska.
Just for Alaska?
Just for the Alaska product.
If I can follow up. Because
Representative Gatto?
It says here that will no longer be able to contribute voluntarily to the state marketing program. But they're spending $70 million, and so I can't make the connection between if they're spending $70 million and they can contribute to the state marketing program, does this mean they're willing to spend $70 million of their own money on advertising but won't contribute a couple of million to to AITA?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, you know, obviously, we're guessing, making a good guess that might be the case. I think the reality is, and it kind of goes to Representative Dugan's question earlier, you know, where the 1090 comes from. The bottom line is the industry's been able to raise $5 million. $3 million is based on voluntary contributions. $2 million is for contributions that add value. And we no longer think that in a new taxing paradigm where the same voluntary contributors may be involuntarily contributing up to $100 million directly to state government, that, yes, it may no longer make sense to ask for that voluntary contribution of $2 million when $100 million is involuntarily being contributed to state government.
Representative Gatto, the wheels are turning.
It's because of wording which says we'll no longer be able to. Is that the same words as will no longer instead of no longer be able to? Is that an intent? I guess what I'm trying to find out is, did they make a declaration, or is this just an estimate in a sectional analysis of a probability or a likelihood or maybe a guess? Was there a declaration made?
I think it's a reasonable, through the chair, to Representative Gatto, I think it's a reasonable likelihood. No declarations of independence have been declared as of yet.
And I want to remind the committee, too, that is in a sponsor statement of a sectional analysis, not in a bill.
And we're certainly hopeful and remain hopeful, okay. But it would be irresponsible for us to stake the future of the thousands of small businesses that depend on this marketing budget on a hope that they will continue to voluntarily contribute.
Representative Gatto.
How voluntary is the word voluntary? Is this something that truly is voluntary, or is there an assessment or something? If you're a member, we take your dues, we take something else, we take a percentage of your income, or is it really like church where it's voluntary?
The cruise industry, Representative Gatto through the chair, the cruise industry's contribution truly is voluntary. Yeah. Amongst themselves, they decide who will contribute what amount based on the number of berths they're bringing to market, but it is voluntarily.
And actually, I was referring to the rest of the money.
The rest of the money outside of the cruise? The rest of the money, $2 million, or actually $2.5 million, now comes from contributions where value is added. So, for example, a small business who wants to purchase an ad in the vacation planner would purchase an ad. They're getting value for that. But they're also showing to you that they do get value for the program. Or somebody who may choose to fly down to Quartzsite, Arizona, participate in a marketing program to RV travelers down there.
Thank you.
So that's why we think we can continue to raise those by adding value to small businesses.
I would like to remind committee members, too, because we're trying to get two bills and a presentation in today's meeting. I'll allow direct questions back and forth, but I'd like to have questions come through the chair. Any other questions from the committee?
I guess I just have a concern about the 90-10. And
I would like to ask the presenter of the bill, Deb.
Yes, that would be fine. I do understand that it's up to the legislature to appropriate and so forth, and I recognize that. But 90-10 seems like quite a bit to be written into statute. What kind of wiggle room is there inside of that? I mean, if we wrote it in at 80-20, you know, Representative Dugan, the first question is why 90-10, specifically that? And you gave a response on that. Could you survive on 80-20, or, you know, can you kind of address that again for my sake?
For the record, we have been joined again by Sharice Miller, representing Representative Harris, and I'd like to comment really quickly on that. Is again, all money does have to be appropriated right to the legislature.
So yes, thank you.
Representative, the Chair, Representative Dahl, it's a policy call that the legislature would make. However, keeping in mind that marketing dollars don't go far when you're doing national campaigns and international campaigns, and when you're competing with other destinations. So I think Brett can follow up with a, you know, more elaborate answer.
Yeah, through the chair, I'll try not to be that elaborate, but really your question goes back to the one that Representative Dugan was asking before. And before 90-10 was come up with, the first thing was coming up with that amount of money, looking legislatures in the eye, that we honestly think we need to move this industry forward. And that's the $20 million marketing budget plus 8.5 independent. And that amount of money, that $20 million, is based on a couple of things. Number one, what were we marketing with 17 years ago at the time the independent side of the industry was thriving? That was $25 million in today's dollars. Second thing we looked at, what are other, not just states, but other destinations in the world, in world-class players. We're not just talking about persons that tourism is a part of their economy, but have the competitive advantages that Alaska has. And Hawaii, 60 million. Australia, 125 million. Las Vegas, 118 million. So in reality, we think that 20 million is the minimum, that investment we need to be a player in the global travel industry. So once you get to 20 million, you know you can raise $2 million, you end up with 1090. And yes, it could be a different amount, but if we can only raise $2 million currently, we'd only be able to, that's how we can match $18
million. Any other questions from the committee? The presenters? Okay, I'd like to go back. If we finished public testimony, is there anybody else off net? Anybody else in the audience who would like to testify? Hearing and seeing none, public testimony is now closed. We will come back to the committee. Does the committee have any other questions or committee comments on this legislation? Chair would entertain a motion to move.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lynn.
You want to do these in order? each bill, obviously each bill separately. Should we do 147 first?
Please.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 147-25-LS0560 /C. Were there any amendments on this, or with attached fiscal note?
Any objection?
Object.
Objection from Representative Gatto. Would you like to speak to your objection? Should we call the roll?
Call the roll.
Call the roll.
Representative Dugan?
Yes.
Representative Corey?
Absent.
Representative Lynn?
Yes.
Representative Johansson?
Yes.
Representative Gatto?
No.
Representative Dahl?
Yes.
Chair Newman?
Yes.
Five yeas and one nay.
Chair would now entertain, that bill passes from this committee. Chair would now entertain any comments on 167 from the committee. Representative Dugan.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm not going to raise any objection to passing this bill out of committee, but I'd have to say that before I'm going to be ready to vote for it on the floor, I would like to see the detailed budget that one of the people who testified said ATIA has, just to satisfy myself that as to what's being done there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. A good point. Maybe we can ask the presenter of that bill or the carrier of that bill when that goes to finance to have that presented, and we will get a copy of that document to the committee members, the members of this committee. Thank you, Representative
Thank
Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative
Lynn? I would respectfully move HB 167, 25-LS 0656 / C with attached fiscal note. I don't think you have any amendments.
Any objections from the committee? Representative yes. Gatto?
Chair.
Would you like to speak to your objection?
Just call.
Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Johansson?
Yes.
Representative Gatto?
No.
Representative Dahl?
Yes.
Representative Dugan?
Yes.
Representative Lynn?
Yes.
Chair Newman?
Yes. This bill has moved from committee. Thank you, presenters. We will now like to we'd now like to invite Mr. John Mileta up to talk about revolutionizing wireless broadband and its potential benefits to customers. I think if I am Mr. Mileta and his partners have a diverse and interesting backgrounds and be able to help us understand the new direction that they think we need to take, and I think that they have some very interesting stuff. John, please come forward, state your name and record, name and affiliation. And this is about a 15-minute presentation.
Yes.
So looking at the time we have, if you have an immediate question you want to ask, go ahead, we'll do that. If not, if we could hold until after the presentation, please proceed. Name and record.
My name is John Mileta, spelled M-U-L-E-T-A. I'm founder and chief executive officer of M2Z Networks. We're a wireless broadband provider headquartered in Menlo Park, California, with offices today in Washington, D.C. area. And I apologize, it's been a long flight, so clearing my throat here.
You're lucky to be here.
All right, we are in the process of getting set up with our PowerPoint presentation, but I'll get started and tell you a little bit about ourselves. My company is a national wireless broadband provider that is seeking an FCC license to be able to provide free nationwide wireless broadband service to the consumers, to American consumers. So no recurring cost, similar to the fashion that people experience broadcast television today. Our backers, just to give you a little bit of context, actually let me start off with myself and my partner. My history has been 22 years in the telecommunications industry. I've worked with phone companies as well as with internet services providers, and I've also served twice in the federal service. Once as deputy bureau chief in the wireline or the common carrier bureau of the Federal Communications Commission, and then the second time as chief of the wireless bureau at the FCC, and been very involved in expanding consumer rights with telecommunication services. I'm probably most known for wireless local number portability, which is the right of the consumer to keep his number and change his cell phone provider, which I think most people appreciate as being something incredibly valuable. My partner is a gentleman by the name of Milo Medin, an ex-NASA person who started a company called At Home Networks, which today was the foundation of the 40 million broadband cable broadband network that has been built in the United States. So in 1996, At Home Networks created the cable broadband infrastructure and brought to Americans what we now know today as cable broadband with 40 million subscribers. Our backers are folks that have invested in companies that have generated over 400,000 jobs in 30 years, over $100 billion in revenue, with about $50 billion of that as export revenues. And they are Kleiner Perkins, which has invested in companies that you might be familiar with, like Google, Amazon.com, Netscape, and also Redpoint Ventures, which is invested in companies such as TiVo, MySpace, and a company that went public a few days ago called Big Band Networks. What we really represent is really this new industry that started about 12 years ago called the Internet broadband. And the challenge in the United States is that we are we're skipping through a number of these slides, which we'll make available to everybody.
The committee does have a copy of this presentation in
okay.
your packet.
Thank you. And I forgot, again, Mr. Chairman and Representative, to thank you for this opportunity to speak to you. I travel around the country, and that's an honor to speak in front of a group that so cares so much about both economic development and the consumer rights. But our folks have invested in all of these companies that really started 12 years ago but generates a tremendous amount of advantages in the United States. Let's go to the next slide. One thing to think about is, what is broadband and why is it important? Well, broadband is really the foundation of both education and economic development in the United States. It's the ability for people to communicate using the internet and the content that's available on it. It's a bipartisan issue. Just want to mention that President Bush has set out a goal of providing universal and affordable broadband in the United States. Speaker Pelosi of the new majority in the Congress on the House side has also declared, as part of the Democratic Innovation Agenda, the goal to have guarantee affordable access to broadband technology to all Americans within 5 years. The stake is really focused not on, you know, people like myself who are, you know, I'm on the other side of 40, on the good side of 40 these days, but really on my kids, who are 7-year-old twin boys who are very facile on the internet and will benefit from the availability of all that, the world's information at their fingertips. The U.S., however, unfortunately, is falling behind. We are number 21 in the global index for broadband availability, both in terms of speed and price, which are the and geographic availability. We are right behind Estonia. So for those of you that know that Estonia is part of Eastern Europe and represents only to be a democratic environment in the last 15 or so years, for us to be behind that is something that we need to address. Where is the broadband gap, you ask? Really, it's in things that you care about. It's in the consumer markets and in the small business markets. Those are the two areas where broadband is not available. Roughly 69 million people in the United States, adults, not including their children, have effectively no internet access. And is that a function of choice? Probably. Is that a function of price and availability? Yes. In the satellite, people that subscribe to satellite services generally do not have an option to subscribe to broadband as part of those satellite services. And there's also small businesses, about 5 million of them, about 57% of them don't have broadband, and 35% of them just have no internet presence at all. So this is a significant gap in the United States that exists, and our company is committed to try and solve that problem. How do Alaskans benefit from affordable broadband? It's clearly, it's about the kids. You got to connect the kids, and not just at the school and not at the library. The United States spends $2.5 billion in a program called E-Rate, which is to connect schools and libraries, which is a laudable goal that came in 1996. But now that that program has been pushed out for 10 years, we now have the challenge of figuring out how to actually connect the kid. I just want you to imagine if we took $2.5 billion, bought books for children, and said you can have it at 8 o'clock when you go to school, and at 3 o'clock we'll take it back from you and leave it in the locker. That's what the internet represents. It's a book that's available at your fingertips all the time. Economic development is really focused on the ability of Alaska as part to communicate, and its consumers and its people to communicate with the lower 48. This is not a state that's an island. It's actually part of a much larger enterprise called the United States. So when people come to Alaska, they need to connect onto broadband. I would love to do that, take out my laptop and instantly connect anywhere that I am, whether it's in the state office or at the hotel or at Roma's Pizza, which is an excellent pizza place, I have to tell you, that where I was last night. I would love to also make sure that when people visit, that they go there. So we want to partner with people to deliver these services. So what's our service? Our service is very simple. We have two flavors. We have a free broadband to the consumer at 384 kilobits, six times faster than broadband, narrowband, than dial-up. That would be free to the consumer. Again, the model I want you to think about as you hear this is the complement is how people subscribe to television, which is you buy a small piece of equipment, the rabbit ears connect you to television services, which are free to the consumer, and roughly you get 3 to 6 channels pretty much most of the United States. Now, if you want to upgrade from that, there is a robust premium broadband service that we plan to offer with partners that are either phone companies, ISPs, or cable companies, or satellite providers that would be at 60 times faster than broadband for a subscription fee. And all of this would be premised on nationwide roaming. We want to build to a nationwide footprint of a minimum of 95% of the United States population within 10 years. Very different than almost any other company in the United States. We've committed with our investors backing to 95% build out with interim benchmarks of 33% within 3 years and 66% within 5 years as a condition of the license that we seek to operate. We also plan to use standard, non-proprietary standards-based technology called WiMAX. Some people will recognize 802.16, that effectively, because it's a standards-based, will lower the cost to consumers and make it effective for them to get into the to get this broadband. As part of our commitment to roll out these services, we have filed a license application with the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. The only person that's authorized in the entire United States to license spectrum is the Federal Communications Commission. And we have asked to lease the spectrum with a 5% franchise fee. We have committed to provide the free service to consumers. We will provide 95% minimum population coverage without taking from the universal services funds. And we will also, because the free service is really targeted at children, we've also committed to filter indecent and obscene materials off the network at the network level so children are never exposed to this information. And then finally, we plan to provide all of public safety users in the service areas free access to the network. What is a comparison today in the marketplace? Companies that provide you with high-speed broadband services provide the same speeds at the cost of the equipment plus an additional $700 to $900 a year. Ours is a non-proprietary based technology that is only involves the one-time cost of equipment. There's a lot of history and regulation. The key here is that the United States government, through many decisions, is encouraging facilities-based competition, meaning only those people that are willing to put up their facilities, they can't get it from the existing players, and that means, at the end of the day, wireless is the best solution. The key here is that the United States market is a very difficult market to do something like this. It takes entrepreneurial spirit, what people in Alaska have for many years proved, which is you can take a tough problem and make it a go, tough environment, and we're willing to do that. We are very committed. Our backers have significant success. And what we're trying to do is provide a private sector solution to a very vexing public policy goal. The other problem in the United States, which we think there's a significant market failure, is the ability of consumers to have family-friendly services as the first right of option as opposed to the second thing you do. Our goal here in talking to you is really to encourage you to focus on promoting market-based solutions and increase competition to the benefit of consumers. A former chief economist of the FCC has put into the record at the FCC that the effect over the 15 years of the license that we seek would be a net present value of $25 billion to the pockets of U.S. consumers. Also promote technology neutrality. The technology we use is very exciting, but needs an opportunity to flourish on a national scale, and so we seek support in that area. The other thing is to focus on real substantial benefits to consumers. This chart is designed here to give you a context on the spectrum that we seek a license for. On the far right-hand side of the page, you'll see 20 megahertz of what is effectively junk spectrum that has been lying fallow for 7 years that the FCC has in its inventory and has not deployed and has no identified uses for, and that's what we're seeking help to carve that out for this kind of service. We filed last year on May 5th of 2006 a license for the application. I have been traveling through all parts of this country, ranging from Florida all the way now to Alaska, making sure people know that this benefit is out there as soon as we can get the license to operate. We've also filed a secondary forbearance petition, which I can answer. But the bottom line is we think in 2007 that we will get the license to operate, especially with the support of Alaskans, and in particular folks like yourself that are in position to let the FCC know that this is an important goal for Alaskans. I think I've addressed this page, so we're asking for your help and the help of Alaskan citizens, and I really thank you for the opportunity for you all and your constituents to get your words and your thoughts about our application to provide free broadband in the United States into the record at the FCC by April 3rd. We have a website which is www.freebroadbandnow.com. .org, I apologize, where Alaskan citizens can go and express their views on this issue. So we thank you for the opportunity. I welcome questions, and I've spoken very fast like a New Yorker, even though I'm from Virginia. So thank you very much.
That's, Mr. Mileta, that's interesting that you are a pin to Alaska from Virginia. Now, we've seen a lot of expansion or a lot of companies interested in coming to Alaska talking about this particular issue. What is driving that? What do you feel is driving that? I know we have folks like Carl Rose working on the education system. Why are you up here from Virginia to try and move this into Alaska? Obviously, besides to be.
Not even fishing season.
Well, the fundamental challenge in the United States is that it's communication services have become national services. So it's very important to actually have coverage in the entire scope of this. I think Alaska represents for a lot of people an opportunity where there is effectively a pricing gap where there is a lot of demand but not enough supply and enough choices. And so a lot of people want to come in and use things like municipal Wi-Fi systems and other types of wireless broadband to essentially, you know, take advantage of the significant demand that exists. The one unique thing about us is we're not simply here to provide competition, but a direct benefit to the consumers with a free broadband service. Our view of it is if there is 98% level penetration for free over-the-air television, wouldn't it be fantastic to have at least 95, if not more, availability of free broadband, two-way, non-passive interaction that's available through broadband and in a responsible manner. So that's the part.
Representative Johansson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First a comment and then a question. I appreciate you coming up here. I found out yesterday, and this is no offense to any of the other members, the average age of elected representatives and senators in this building is about 56. A lot of us grew up with this being second nature. So I'm glad you're coming up here early to educate everybody on what you're trying to do. My question is, early when the internet took off, it was really text-based. I had read in some magazine over the last couple weeks that they anticipate that shifting to almost 80% video, which goes right along with broadband. Can you comment on whether that's accurate, or is this kind of where the industry is pointing towards streaming video, live video, and such, and that's the importance of the broadband connection?
Mr. Chair, to answer the representative's question, we believe that is the primary driver for broadband is what we call the personalization of the internet. It's you know, people putting up video clips of their parties and their, you know, sort of stories of life, the bloggers, which is still text-based, but adding video blogging. All of that aspect of it really requires broadband experience. The fundamental thing about broadband that my partner, Milo, who effectively created the industry with the cable broadband has 60% market share in the United States, and Milo was fundamentally responsible for that. And what he would tell you is the nature of internet, of broadband, is really not even speed. It's the fact that it's always on. So remember when dial-up, or if you have dial-up, or if you used to have dial-up, you used to put it up in the attic on the top floor and used to run up and do things in between because there would be this chugging sound, right, chugga, 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 as it dialed out. When you have broadband, really the fundamental key part of it is it's always on. So you put it in the kitchen, so you're kind of doing stuff immediately and getting that response interaction. There's no dialing that goes on. And I think that added with the personalization, not just on video, but just the entire experience of two-way communication is what broadband stands for.
And
thanks, Mr. Chair. My understanding in the past was Alaska was called the most connected place on the planet. But because I'm referring to only 50%, 7% of small businesses use the internet for business, I can't believe that's anything less than 100. There is no business possible that would not do that. I mean, can't imagine a business that doesn't. But that's not my question.
Okay.
The question comes to slamming and cramming.
Yes, sir.
Need an explanation.
Actually, I used to be chief of the enforcement division in the 90s when slamming and cramming was a big issue, and I used to chase the bad guys. And to answer the question through Mr. Chair, slamming is the unauthorized switching of your long-distance provider, and cramming is when companies called information services companies use the billing record of phone companies to put on unauthorized charges, right? It's $1 of quote-unquote in information services across a million telephone subscribers using the billing system. You know, if folks are sloppy, $1 million can actually pass through the system before people recognize on their bills. I don't know if you've seen my phone bill. I don't understand. I see a long list of things.
Eight additions.
Yes, and so those are the things that are very difficult to track unless all the people in the chain are actually very active in monitoring.
Thanks, Representative Gatto. Again, we learn something every day.
Follow up. Is this something the phone company that I subscribe to is doing, or somebody is getting into my phone company and adding a dollar to my bill somehow?
I can't speak about your particular phone company, but I will tell you based on my past experiences, a lot of the phone companies offer their billing services, you know, the ability to send bills to millions of customers as a business transaction to information services providers. Some of them are audio text providers. Some of them are, you know, these are both valid and maybe not sometimes so valid businesses, depending on where you stand. The real issue is diligence on the part of all the people in the chain to make sure that if a dollar is put on, that you have sort of thought about why that dollar is being put on, whether the subscriber has opted in, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes, you know, this sloppiness creates that sloppy business practices.
Thank you, Mr. Mileta. And I'll remind the members that Mr. Mileta will be here after the committee meeting, but I'm making sure that we are aware of all the committee members' other commitments. Representative Lynn?
I'm coming from the political direction. When I first got up here in Alaska, went into politics, as it were, I was one of the very few candidates out there who had a candidate website. I did it myself, by the way.
Right.
And now everybody and uncle who runs for anything has a website. And blogging, I'm obviously the oldest member of this committee, but yet I think I'm the only member of this committee who has a personal blog, a legislative blog site. I want to get into some video clips on that later on. So this, you know, this national politics are now are being affected by broadband. You know, national blogs can affect elections one way or the other, and we've only just begun.
To Mr. Chair, to reply to the representative's point, the statistics are stunning in terms of the impact that broadband has on the political discourse. On average in the United States, there is about 100, roughly about 100 million people in the United States that are not, 120 million adults that are not connected to broadband in one form or another. So they either have dial-up. I'm sorry?
But they don't vote.
Well, but I think that really brings the issue that if you had the connection, then the information would be available, and maybe it swings, even if it's only a small percentage of people that have the information.
Mr. Mileta, I'd like to put the rubber to the road here and ask you somewhat of a direct question. So you're asking us to try and encourage FCC to focus on your market base and trying to contact them so that you can come to work in Alaska. Say that happens. How much money are you going to invest in Alaska? What are we going to see if this happens?
We think we're going to invest over the United States roughly about $2 billion in the first 10 years. And as we go there, we think roughly Alaska, given its geography, et cetera, that it's roughly around $50 million. You know, but again, without the license, without the right to operate, it's going to be a hard number for me to verify today. But we think, again, that people are going to enjoy these services.
So you substantially want to come to work in Alaska and to be a large player in the state as far as broadband.
Yes, and Mr. Chair, we would love to have Alaskans as they go here to have our service, and we'd love for them to have our service when they're in the lower 49th. So
there's a few people go there once in a while during the winter. Representative Gatto?
There is a downside. And if I get one more mailing from my great uncle general in Sudan about treasure that is going to be sent to me if I simply fill out some paperwork, I'm going to throw up. So how do we stop that if indeed the band gets broader and broader and broader?
Mr. Chair, to answer the representatives, actually the best answer to that is competition. People ought to want your business on their ability to stop spam. That's spam, that's an unwanted commercial. There are tools and technologies, mm-hmm. and you want the service providers, you want, whether it's us or somebody else, to say, we're going to make sure that, our incentive ought to be, because of competition, we will make sure that we get rid of that spammer. And that's really the way the markets ought to work, and we're a free market company.
Mr. Mulleta, you stated that you want to partner with some Alaskan companies. Have you contacted any Alaska companies? What Alaska companies want to work with you? Explain that partnership and who you've had contact with.
To be perfectly honest, we've been working with the Association of Rural Phone Companies. We've talked to National Telecommunications Cooperative, the Independent Telephone Association, as well as the APATSCO, which is an organization of small rural phone companies. And we've gotten very warm reception. We are now here in Alaska, sort of if we get a warm reception, then we can engage directly with various companies. The unfortunate thing is, until we have our license, then nobody wants to invest the time to actually engage in a business discussion. So we're hoping your support. Quick action by the FCC, which is the most important thing for us, is quick action. We're a Silicon Valley-based company. We're either in business or we're not, and we'd like not to sit around and make the people in Washington that take you around to various meetings rich. So,
thank you, Mr. Mulleta. Do we have any other questions from the committee? Thank you for your Representative Gatto.
Where'd you go to school?
I have 3 degrees, engineering, master's in business, and law, from the University of Virginia. Charlottesville is a fantastic city, fantastic town, so I spent 8 years of my life there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, committee members. And I just want to mention, too, that I noticed that the House Special Committee on Economic Development, Trade, and Tourism has had a substantial crowd in our audience since we started. I think we've covered a large range of different topics, and we bring in quite a few different people. I'm very proud of that. I still encourage members to go out there, search what's available in Alaska for economic opportunities. Let's hear from them and see what they have to say. Thank you for your presentation. We will now close this meeting.
Thank
the time
you.
Is 12:20.